Welcome to another edition of the Health First Show. I'm your host, Dave Fuller, and today we're going to be talking about stomach health. We're going to be talking with Dr. Kate Ray on Blue in the first half of the show. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about detox with Dr. Deanna Minch. And before we do that, here's Alan with the health news.
Even an ounce of alcohol a day might alter heart function if you have high blood pressure, researchers report. For someone with high blood pressure, drinking, even in small amounts, can impair functioning of the lower left chamber of the heart, which pumps blood to the rest of the body, according to a new study from Italy. Lead researcher Dr. Leonardo Secchi said because even moderate alcohol consumption increases occurrence of early functional cardiac changes in patients with high blood pressure, reduction of use of alcoholic beverages might be beneficial for prevention of cardiac complications in these patients. How this heart damage occurs isn't known, and the study doesn't establish a direct cause and effect relationship. For the study, Secchi and his colleagues studied the effect of alcohol on 335 patients with high blood pressure who had no other heart problems. The team found signs of heart damage in nearly half the participants, which was associated with how much they drank. The study results were scheduled for presentation at a recent meeting of the American Society of Hypertension in New York. Here's an alert for all dog lovers. Sugarless chewing gum isn't good for your pooch. In fact, it could be deadly. Xylitol, the substance that gives sugar-free gum its sweetness, is dangerous to dogs, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration warns. The FDA has received multiple reports in recent years of dogs being poisoned by xylitol, which is used in various consumer products such as sugar-free candy, breath mints, baked goods, chewable vitamins, mouthwash, and toothpaste. Martine Hartogenis, a FDA veterinarian, says if you're concerned about your dog eating a food or product with xylitol in it, check the label of ingredients. If it does indeed say that it contains xylitol, make sure your pet can't get to it. Xylitol isn't dangerous to people, but dogs process it differently than humans. They absorb it quickly, and it can spike their insulin levels, causing dangerously low blood sugar. This can be life-threatening if it's not treated, Hartogenis said. As any parent of a preschooler knows, media management can be a minefield of do's, don'ts, and tantrums. Tablets and other electronic gizmos can provide a child with learning and entertainment, but what works when it's time to sign off? A new study into the issue holds some surprises, including the fact that giving a preschooler a 2-minute warning for media downtime may backfire. Even though the study found almost 4 in every 5 parents use the technique, only 20% of them said it actually helps. Study lead author Alexis Hinneker said the 2-minute warning can both set expectations and remind a child that he or she is not the one in control. That can lead to a power struggle, she said. Hinneker is a doctoral candidate in the Department of Human-Centered Design and Engineering at the University of Washington, Seattle. She and her colleagues were slated to present the findings at a meeting of the Association for Computing Machinery in San Jose, California. Texting while driving is riskier than driving while upset or mentally distracted, a new study suggests. Researchers from the University of Houston and the Texas A&M Transportation Institute said that drivers have a sixth sense that offsets absent-minded or emotional driving. But this extra sense doesn't kick in among drivers who are texting because their eye-hand coordination loop is broken, the researchers explained. In a news release, study leader Jonas Pavlidis said what makes texting so dangerous is that it wreaks havoc with his sixth sense. Self-driving cars may bypass this and other problems. But the moral of the story is that humans have their own auto systems that work wonders until they break. The study involved 59 volunteers who were instructed to drive the same section of highway 4 times. They drove once under normal conditions. Another time they drove while being distracted with mentally challenging questions. A third time they were distracted with emotionally charged questions. The fourth time they were preoccupied with texting. But it was only while texting that drivers veered out of their lane or drove unsafely, the researchers said.
Thanks for that, Alan. Well, our first guest, Dr. Kate Ray on Blue, is a naturopathic physician and the author of a number of books. And today we're talking about stomach health. Dr. Kate, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. Good to be here.
So, you know, you see a lot of people, you've done a lot of research, and I'm interested to find out if, you know, what goes on in our gut is really indicative of what what goes on in the rest of our body.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I mean, the health of our gastrointestinal tract really provides the foundation of health for our whole body on a number of levels, the least of which is nutrient absorption, of course, and also a large part of our immunity happens in and along the gastrointestinal tract. So things that happen in our intestines really influence and affect our immune system, which affects our health in general. And there's a huge connection between the gut and the brain. So things that happen in our digestive tract affect our mood, and our mood and mindset will also affect our digestion, as most people are aware of intuitively. So there really is so many connections. Good digestive health is the foundation of good health.
What is the conventional treatment for stomach issues?
Well, it depends on the issue, but one of the most commonly prescribed medicines for a very common condition of GERD, reflux, acid indigestion, as people might refer to it, is, for example, proton pump inhibitors. These are one of the most widely sold drugs in the world. People will take this if they have stomach ulcers, for example, or severe heartburn, recurrent heartburn, peptic ulcer disease. And the purpose of these drugs is to decrease stomach acid production. They're the most potent inhibitors of acid secretion. And the thing with proton pump inhibitors, however, even though they're very widely prescribed, they're really only supposed to be taken and are only safely taken for quite short periods of time. But many people take these on a daily basis for very long periods of time. They essentially, chronically manage their acid indigestion or their ulcers with these kinds of drugs. And over the long term, they've been shown to have pretty serious downsides and side effects.
What is it about acid reflux that, I understand that it's painful, but what are some of the natural ways that people can treat this?
Well, fortunately, there are a lot of natural ways that people can treat that. Now, dietary changes are, I think, should be one of those, uh-huh. and that can be daunting for some individuals. I've seen people even just make, it sounds like a simple change, but it can be a difficult change. For example, going on a wheat-free or gluten-free diet can make a big difference in their acid reflux. Uh-huh. But it can be other things as well, stress and maybe other aspects of your diet that are problematic. And fortunately, there are natural treatments that can be very effective for the reflux as well as ulcers that can come along with it. Some new ones that are just sort of coming on the market, still with research behind them, as well as some very old traditional remedies that are now being appreciated again, are being put back on the market in terms of natural ways to treat. For example, mastic gum is one of these that we're now seeing being made available to treat stomach upset and reflux like this.
What about, you hear when people get heartburn that or indigestion, they start taking a lot of calcium products like Tums is the name brand that a lot of people take, but, calcium carbonate. Are there risks associated with that, and does it work?
Oh, definitely. Good question. Well, for some individuals, taking exactly these forms of calcium carbonate essentially to counteract their stomach acid may provide some short-term relief. But first of all, it's not treating the underlying problem as to why the acid is there, why there's discomfort, and why there may be excess acid production, or even if that is, in fact, the problem. And secondly, they can alter, by altering your stomach acid, you can alter your absorption of certain nutrients. This is certainly the problem that we've seen with proton pump inhibitors, but any medicine that you're using to change your stomach acid can change how you're absorbing certain nutrients, like B12, and magnesium, for example, and iron. And ultimately, people can end up with too much calcium intake from taking these types of antacids.
What happens when we get too much calcium, Dr. Kate?
Well, that's a subject that's near and dear to my heart. I spent a lot of time researching this, but excess calcium intake is not a good thing. People may think, well, the more the better when it comes to calcium. And actually, that's often sort of part of the story that's told. They say, you can take these pills as an antacid, and as a side benefit, you're getting extra calcium. Well, you don't usually need that extra calcium, and it can be harmful. Excess calcium can accumulate in areas of the body where it's dangerous, places like carotid arteries, heart valves, leading to hardening of the arteries, which is this calcium-laden plaque that we see that is associated with heart attacks and strokes. And studies have shown that people who take calcium supplements, and again, these types of antacids would count as a calcium supplement, that they are at risk 20 to 30% more heart attacks and strokes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's fairly significant, 20 to 30%, just by because you're taking extra calcium, which you thought you're doing in your body good.
Exactly. We, you know, seem to think calcium is good for our bones, so the more calcium, the better. And in fact, just because you're taking calcium doesn't mean it's getting into your bones. And it could, and studies suggest it very well, is going to more dangerous areas, lining soft tissues like arteries. So it is a real downside of relying on those types of medicines to manage stomach acid problems.
So, you know, you talked about mastic gum, you talked about, you talked about food for changing the acid reflux or getting rid of heartburn, but are we not doing the exact same thing? We're treating a symptom? You know, what do we have to do to really get to the root of the problem? And how do we, you know, what kind of products or changes do we need to make?
Well, it depends. The idea isn't usually to treat symptoms, although you can do that with natural remedies. You can have natural remedies that, as we say, palliate or just treat the symptoms, as well as ones that treat the potential cause of what's going on. Now, as I was saying, Dave, in practice, usually the cause is often something that people are eating. And so doing dietary changes can make a big difference, and that really varies per individual, although I've seen wheat be a big culprit for many people. So dietary changes can be part of it. But when you're looking at natural treatments, they can often also be addressing what's really going on, the root cause. So, for example, for people with ulcers, frequently H. pylori has been identified as a culprit, so a bacteria in the stomach that is leading to ulcers, which is leading to pain. And by addressing that, eradicating that bacteria, or at least getting back down to manageable levels, that can really make a difference in terms of actually affecting a healing. And so, you know, the mastic gum that I mentioned earlier, this has been shown to be able to do that. So this is a resin from a tree. It's in sort of the pine family, but this particular one grows in parts of Europe, particularly in Greece. And it's long been used, though, the resin from this tree as actual chewing gum, as well as a flavoring for foods and a preservative for foods because it has an antibacterial property. And mastic gum has been shown to fight H. pylori bacteria. And that in itself can be very helpful for people dealing with ulcers, which are often connected to H. pylori.
You know, if we get back to you know, the stomach acid again, and you know, we're trying to get away from the proton pumps, you know, that you mentioned earlier, what can we do to reduce the acid naturally? Is it just the mastic gum, or is it just that diet, or what else can we do?
Well, there's a lot of things that can be done. So dietary changes can be very helpful for individuals. And you're looking at balancing out the stomach acid, for example. Dealing with H. pylori can be important. This is where mastic gum comes in. Balancing the gut microbiome, so this is the balance of the good and the bad bacteria, that can potentially be very important. So probiotics can be quite helpful when it comes to that. And as well, there are other natural treatments that can deal with irritation to the lining. For example, zinc L-carnosine. This is a form of zinc. Zinc, of course, is a healing mineral, but it tends to pass through the digestive tract too quickly, usually, to be helpful in, say, ulcers. And this form of zinc keeps the zinc in the damaged area for a little bit longer. And that can make it helpful for actually healing damaged areas of the stomach and intestines.
We're talking with Dr. Kate Rayon Blue. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be finding out more about how you can heal up your stomach.